There is no reason for measures that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade.
The head of the World Health Organization makes his case against blocking all travel to and from China. This is Tuesday, the 4th of February, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, you'll hear the latest on the continuing spread of the Wuhan coronavirus. Impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump head toward a likely early end. And the U.S. presidential race will see its first selection process in just a few hours. That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. China's top leadership Monday admitted shortcomings and difficulties in its response to the coronavirus outbreak as state media said a new hospital built at breakneck pace began receiving patients in the epicenter of the crisis. 57 new deaths were confirmed Monday, the single biggest daily increase since the virus was detected late last year in the central city of Wuhan. The death toll in China stood at 361. That exceeds the 349 mainland fatalities from the severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, outbreak of 2002 and 3, which eventually killed nearly 800. The government of Beijing nevertheless hit out at the United States for sparking panic with its response to the coronavirus, including a ban on foreigners who have recently been to China. The virus has so far spread to more than 20 countries, and several other nations have instituted similarly tough rules. The number of cases of the virus in the United States has risen. Dr. Nancy Meissonier is with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. She says they have seen several new cases.
The new cases include one patient identified in Massachusetts and four more patients in California. Four of the five patients have travel history to Wuhan, China. One patient in California is a close household contact of another patient in California.
The World Health Organization has declared the crisis a global health emergency, and the first foreign death from the virus was confirmed in the Philippines Sunday. As the coronavirus continues to spread worldwide, many countries, including the United States, are denying entry to all foreign visitors who had recently been to China as part of a global effort to stop the spread. VOA's Lada Tahok reports people returning home from China are being quarantined.
The death of the first patient outside China puts additional pressure on health authorities worldwide to boost measures to protect their citizens. The United States, Australia, and an increasing number of other countries have barred the arrival of foreigners from China, but they cannot bar their own citizens from returning home. France has set up two quarantine centers where its citizens have to spend 2 weeks under observation before they can go home.
We are obviously monitoring the health situation of each of these people very closely, and everything is organized to ensure that there are no infections should any occur.
More than 300 people have died in the coronavirus outbreak in China, most of them in the central Hubei province. More than 14,000 people have been infected in 24 countries. Health authorities believe the virus can reproduce and exist inside the digestive tract, but have not yet determined how it is spread.
In Wuhan, Shenzhen, and even in the first virus cases in the United States, they detected new coronavirus in feces of the patients. This phenomenon indicates that the virus can reproduce and exist inside the digestive tract, but whether the virus is spread through fecal-oral transmission or through droplets containing the virus that forms an aerosol and then spreads, this requires epidemiological research to confirm.
Italian scientists say they have isolated the DNA sequence of the new coronavirus. The findings were made at the Lazzaro Spallanzani National Institute for Infectious Diseases, which was treating a couple of Chinese visitors who were sickened by the virus.
Having isolated the virus means that we'll have many more opportunities to study it, to understand it, and to better test what can be proved effective to contain its spread.
Italian Health Minister Roberto Speranza told reporters Sunday, the findings would be shared with the international community. The Chinese couple have been Italy's only two cases of the virus. The rest of Europe has confirmed more than 20 patients infected by the new strain. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
All but one of the 57 new deaths reported Monday were in Wuhan, the rest of Hubei province, most of which has been under lockdown for almost 2 weeks. In Wuhan, where the virus is believed to have jumped from animals to a market into humans, authorities have been racing to build two new hospitals to treat the infected. The first of those, a 1,000-bed facility, began to receive patients Monday, according to the People's Daily, just 10 days after construction had started. The second hospital is due to open later this week. The coronavirus outbreak is taking its toll economically. Stay with us for that. The story is next. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has demanded demonstrable evidence from the Taliban that it will lower the violence level in Afghanistan before signing a deal that would lead to peace talks and a withdrawal of U.S. troops from the country. Only three checkpoints are left open from Hong Kong to mainland China as health workers go on strike in an attempt to get the government to fully close borders and provide better supplies for medical staff and patients. Authorities in Hanoi announced students will get a week off to limit the spread of the coronavirus. A warship left Tokyo's port to protect merchant ships and oil tankers passing through the Gulf of Oman that supplies 90% of Japan's oil as Mideast tensions simmer. VOA Asia continues. The coronavirus that started in Wuhan, China, is taking an increasing economic toll, shutting down businesses, curbing international travel, and impacting production lines of major global brands. The Shanghai stock market plunged almost 8% Monday on the first day of trading since the holiday as investors played catch-up with last week's global retreat. In Wuhan, which has been transformed from a bustling industrial hub into a near ghost town, residents have been living in deep fear of catching the virus. The city's medical facilities have been overwhelmed, with Xinhua reporting that 68 medical teams of 8,300 staff had been sent to Hubei. The industrial city of Wenzhou, 800 kilometers to the east, was placed under a similar lockdown to Wuhan on Sunday. It's 9 million people ordered to stay indoors. The emergence of the virus coincided with the Lunar New Year, when hundreds of millions traveled across the country for family reunions. Originally scheduled to end last Friday, the holiday was extended by 3 days to give authorities more time to deal with the crisis. But some major cities, including Shanghai, extended it again, and many schools and universities have delayed the start of new terms. Many nations have evacuated hundreds of their citizens from China, with some forcing them into quarantine on their return, and more airlines are canceling services to the mainland. China's foreign ministry Monday criticized the United States for being among the first to evacuate nationals without providing substantial assistance to China. The U.S. actions had caused panic, said a spokeswoman. The Director General of the World Health Organization is urging countries not to close their borders to foreigners in response to the virus outbreak. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United States, Australia, Singapore, and a growing number of other countries are denying entry to foreigners traveling from China in an effort to limit the spread of the deadly coronavirus. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says 151 cases of the disease and one death have been confirmed in 23 countries outside China. He says the small number of cases can be managed without countries resorting to extreme measures.
There is no reason for measures that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade. We call on all countries to implement decisions that are evidence-based and consistent. WHO stands ready to provide advice to any country that's considering which measures to take.
Last week, WHO declared the coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern and issued several recommendations to prevent and limit the further spread of the virus. Tedros says the disease was mainly declared a global health threat out of concern that countries with weaker health systems would have difficulty in containing the virus, which can spread from person to person. As such, he says one of the recommendations is for international support to countries with fragile health systems. He says other recommendations include efforts to accelerate the development of vaccines and medicines, as well as measures to combat the spread of rumors and misinformation.
Review preparedness plans, identify gaps, and evaluate the resources needed to identify, isolate, and care for cases and prevent transmission. Both the coronavirus preparedness, not panic.
Tedros says only solidarity and cooperation among all countries will defeat the coronavirus outbreak. He says everyone is in this together, and the only way to stop the virus from spreading is by working together. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Mongolia, Russia, and Nepal have closed their land borders, while semi-autonomous Hong Kong announced Monday it was closing all but two land crossings. Also Monday, the Cruise Lines International Association, which represents some of the world's largest operators, said vessels will deny boarding to passengers and crew who have recently traveled to China. Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong confirmed Monday that country had plunged into a recession last year, 2019, suffering its first annual contraction in a decade after falling under the twin pressures of the U.S.-China trade war and months of pro-democracy protest. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. U.S. House Democrats prosecuting the impeachment case against President Donald Trump and his defense team offered their closing arguments Monday at his Senate trial, even as his acquittal remains all but certain. VOA Capitol Hill correspondent Catherine Gibson joins us from Capitol Hill. Catherine, what's been the stances taken by those who brought the impeachment to the Senate and those who were defending the president?
Well, you know, remember, it's interesting that we're having these closing arguments up on Capitol Hill today because, of course, today also marks the very first day and the very first nominating contest in the 2020 presidential election, which actually figured pretty largely in the president's defense. They're making the argument that impeachment is actually a subversion of American democracy and that because we're already into the 2020 election cycle, the American voters should be the ones who make the decision and that it's absolutely out of bounds for Democrats to try this impeachment case, which would effectively take President Trump off the ballot in 2020. You know, of course, Democrats will tell you that the election is also pushing them forward. They're saying that because President Trump allegedly invited foreign election interference, they have this pushing need to prosecute the impeachment case and to make sure that he doesn't meddle with the election process in November. So really a lot of talk about the election up here on Capitol Hill and a sense of a pressing need on both sides.
Well, is there any way that the Democrats, to many people's view, presented a very pressing and believable scenario? Do you think they made any impression whatsoever on any Republicans, any indication of that whatsoever?
Well, I don't think that they changed any Republican minds. And actually, we've just heard from a moderate swing state Democrat, Joe Manchin, who represents West Virginia, which has a lot of the president's supporters living there. He actually just took to the Senate floor and said that, well, he doesn't find the president's July 25th phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky a perfect phone call by any means. He is still undecided about how he is going to vote on impeachment on Wednesday. And, you know, look, that tells you something, is that somebody who is in this swing state, who is trying to represent a lot of the president's supporters, is still on the fence after months of investigation, after months of this being litigated out in public. He's still making up his mind.
Well, Manchin represents a state with many, many people in the coal industry, which is not right in the best shape. So I guess that's a little understandable. So what happens next?
So what happens next is that senators continue to take to the Senate floor to talk through their decisions on their impeachment vote. Remember, these are senators who have been sitting for two and a half weeks. and not been allowed to talk except through those written questions that they handed through to the House impeachment managers and the president's counsel. So this is really their first time to get up in front of the cameras, as is important for senators to do, and really talk through this decision-making process. They'll be doing that through tonight. They'll be doing that tomorrow, Tuesday, even as the Capitol prepares for the annual State of the Union address. And then on Wednesday at 4 p.m., this all finally comes to a close when they make that final vote on impeachment.
And VOA Capitol Hill correspondent Catherine Gibson will be there. That means you will as well. Catherine mentioned the Iowa caucuses, which is the first step as far as selecting a Democratic, well, a Republican too, but that goes without saying. It's going to be Trump. But as far as Democrats are concerned, that is that's open, and we're going to explore that in just a moment. Thanks again for being here, Catherine.
You're so welcome.
This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
Here's a news alert from VOA Asia. President Rodrigo Duterte Monday urged Philippine citizens to stop stirring up anti-Chinese xenophobia related to the outbreak of the coronavirus that emerged in Wuhan, China in December and has since killed more than 300 and infected more than 17,000. The outbreak has stoked a wave of anti-Chinese sentiment. VOA Asia continues. Democrats are expecting a high turnout for the first presidential selection event in the United States, the Iowa caucuses, to take place today. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, while many voters in Iowa are still undecided on the candidate they believe can best challenge Republican President Donald Trump in the November general election, they welcome the attention the process brings to their state.
It looks like a concert, sounds like a concert, and feels like a concert. But this is actually a campaign event for presidential hopeful Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, one of four candidates leading polls for Democrats in the Iowa caucuses. The event was filled with Sanders signs, Sanders merchandise, and Sanders supporters.
Are we just getting people signed in? Is that all right?
But what was noticeably absent was Sanders himself. Sanders and fellow Senators Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, and Michael Bennett are all candidates who have lost time campaigning on the ground in Iowa while attending the impeachment proceedings of President Trump in Washington, D.C., although they were back in Iowa over the weekend.
In Iowa, we like to see the candidates, that we like to see them a lot. In fact, that's the joke both here and in New Hampshire, that they can't decide on a candidate until they've talked to the person three or four or five times.
University of Iowa political science professor Timothy Hagel says candidates kept from the state are relying on surrogates to encourage voters to attend caucus night events, where turnout is key for a candidate's group of supporters to win the room, and ultimately, the caucus.
And they have to reach 15% to be considered viable as a group. If they're not viable as a group, then they have to realign.
In the second round, choose a different candidate.
It took Drake University political science professor David Skidmore a while to settle on his first choice, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. His second pick isn't as clear.
A lot of people have remained undecided right up until perhaps even today.
Thanks for what you're doing. I appreciate it.
Which is why connecting with as many supporters as possible in the final days in Iowa could make or break caucus night for candidates in a race that opinion polls show is crowded with frontrunners, including Sanders, Warren, former Vice President Joe Biden, and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
It's a little intimidating just because there's a lot of opinions being thrown around, but I think it's healthy, and as long as nobody gets too angry during the process, it's a good learning experience.
Aubrey Christensen is supporting Sanders and is proud of Iowa's role in selecting the Democratic presidential nominee.
it's really kind of fascinating for Iowa to be a spotlight just because we're one of the states that's overlooked.
I think it's nice, though. The people of Iowa do have a word. I know we're right in the middle of the country. People just think of us as like a corn state or a farmer state. There's a lot more here than that, and we have a voice, and I think it's pretty loud, and I think we're going to show it.
We are the most experienced state at beginning this process. We are the state that understands and appreciates retail politics. We are the state that understands our job isn't necessarily to pick, quote-unquote, the winner. Our job is to basically narrow the field so the rest of the country has a fewer choices, but good choices, to begin the vetting process.
Hey, man, what's your best president?
A vetting process that doesn't slow down once a winner is declared in Iowa. The spotlight then turns to voters in New Hampshire and a primary election there a week later. Kane Faerbaugh, VOA News, Des Moines, Iowa.
This news break from VOA Asia, the Philippines beefing up security protocols to protect its energy sector from foreign interference, its national security advisor said, following concerns raised by some of the country's politicians about China's access to the country's power grid. Bushfires in Australia have ruined crops in parts of the country's winemaking areas. The full extent of the damage is still being calculated, but some grape growers have lost their entire harvest to so-called smoke taint. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
The cost of Australia's bushfire disaster continues to climb. Thousands of homes have been damaged or destroyed, and lives and livelihoods have been lost. The nation's multi-million dollar wine industry has been badly hit. Vineyards have been damaged in three Australian states, New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia. Some have been directly affected by the fires, while others have been smothered by a smoky haze. If grapes are exposed to smoke towards the end of the growing season, they can absorb compounds from burnt trees that give wine an unpleasant taste, making it unsaleable. This has led to many grapes being left unpicked. Stuart Horden is a senior winemaker with Brokenwood Wines in the New South Wales Hunter Valley.
The largest impact from these smoke events is certainly on the growers. The fruit crop each year is their income for the year, and they're heavily affected by it. There are growers that we've had to walk away from. There are growers that we've taken a significantly lower amount of fruit from, and that really impacts on their livelihood, and we need to make sure that those guys get through the year.
The unprecedented bushfire season follows the impact of a long drought in many wine-producing areas in Australia, which had already reduced the size of the crop. Adding to the financial costs is a fall in the number of tourists visiting vineyards because of the fires. There's also the realization that climate change will bring more frequent and more intense bushfires, and that the wine industry will inevitably be affected by more smoke in the years ahead. Australian wine exports are worth about $1.86 billion. The three biggest markets are China, the United States, and Great Britain. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
A Northwestern University-led team of scientists recently developed a method that may help determine if an exoplanet can actually support life. The technique checks a planet's habitability by combining 3D climate modeling along with atmospheric chemistry. To determine a planet's habitability, the new tool measures radiation emitted by the star as well as the rotation rate of the planet itself. The researchers found planets orbiting stars emitting a lot of ultraviolet radiation lose much of its liquid water to vaporization, while planets around stars with low levels of UV radiation tend to preserve their supplies of water. It was also found that even planets with livable surface temperatures could be inhabitable if surrounded with thin ozone layers. This would allow the planet to be bombarded with dangerous levels of UV radiation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Visit our voanews.com program page. Our thanks for joining us to you, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler. The managing director is Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team consists of Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.